Blog Talk Radio.
I am immortal, I'll never fade away. I'm a legacy that lives beyond, far beyond the grave. I am immortal, I'll never rest in peace. And you're never gonna be, never gonna be, never be.
On our network, I should say.
It wouldn't be entertaining unless we were all a little crazy, you know?
Right. Oh, man. Finally got the internet working now. I'm in the process of fixing our show page. So I'm trying to do that right now.
What kind of internet do you have?
I do it through my cell phone because I don't use it that much as far as the internet because I use my phone. But when I use my laptop to do the show, I do a wireless hotspot through my phone. So my cell phone, I have to keep my phone around in order to find a signal. And
holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. And
we have satellite.
It only does it when I have to do a radio show. Any other time, I have no issues. None.
Of course, that's the way it is, man. When you need it, you can't do it. We have satellite, and if it rains or something, man, we're screwed.
Yeah. Well, I'm just screwed to begin with.
Well, at least we all don't have dial-up. How wonderful would that be?
I remember those days, unfortunately.
And you have to, like, bitch at people for actually being on the phone so you can look something up. And then it was like, oh, God. Those were the days.
Those were the days. Oh, come on, open up. So, yeah, I'm trying to talk and edit the show page at the same time, so forgive me if I get quiet for a minute. I can walk. I don't think I can walk and chew gum at the same time.
You know, we can tell you about our experience with Old South if you want for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
Yeah. It went awesome. I mean, it went, like, we went with Team East Tennessee, and we loved those guys. But the thing is they had it for a whole week. And when we showed up, those guys had been doing, like, just, you know how when you used to go in there, it was kind of dark all the time? These guys had been working their butt off. And they were taking the stuff off the glass, you know how it was dark and blackened and stuff. And it actually looked more, when you walked through, it looked like a hospital during the daytime, not one that was abandoned. So it was really neat. They had moved some furniture around and stuff, and it made it more homey. It made it more to where it didn't look like the haunted feature. It looked like a hospital, which I'm hoping that we get some really good evidence out of it, but it was really neat. It was, the guys were really welcoming, and we got to go in, and we had, like, our little rooms, and it was a great time, man. And the atmosphere, it was really cool because our team, I was proud of them, because when we went in, we all knew what we were doing then. First time when you go in, you don't expect what actually comes out of that hospital. But then when we went in, my team was ready. They hit the ground running, and we knew the signs of if something was happening, what steps it would take. And the weird thing is it did it. It went down those lines of just the same thing as it did last time. But we were able to actually cut it off and say, no, we're not going down that way. And it was just really neat. And I have to say I was proud of them, all of us, because we grew, and that was the neatest thing too.
One thing that actually happened that we've never had happen before, and we were really thorough about it, we were actually in a room, and we got a foul smell. Like, I mean, it smelled like dead animal dog, and it went all the way around the room. The awesome part is I was the one who, like, smelt it, so I got to tell my sister to smell everyone else's feet to make sure it wasn't them. So that was always nice. She got to follow the smell this time, and it wasn't from our asses or our feet. So that was, like, something we've never had, a phantom, like, death smell in a place. So that was really different. Yeah, it was.
At least it wasn't anybody's ass.
That's true, because I'm tired of smelling their dirty asses. I got to tell you that. Even though it was hotter than Hades, oh, my God, it was like 1,000 degrees in that damn hospital. We had to go to the Walmart down the street and actually buy clothes because we brought, like, long britches and everything, because, you know, when you go places, you don't know what you're going to get with, like, rashes and all that kind of crap. Well, I came out with a rash, man. I got it, like, on my legs, on my arms, but damn it, it was so hot that I was like, hell with it. I'll wear these britches and get it eat up, man, because I can't handle it. We were just standing there sweating. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
But it was really neat. Like, when she was talking about, like, the smell, that is the craziest crap that we've ever had. And it almost, and when it happened is when we were reading Bible verses. And there's this one room, Martha's room, and that's where it kind of picked up with this last time. We knew. We could tell this is where it started from, or downstairs, and then followed us up there. And the thing is,
what were y'all doing when the foul smell happened?
We were reading Bible verses, and the thing is it was coming over. And this smell came in the room, and you want to know what, though? It came in so strong, and Rachel, the other lady in our group, our other founder, well, we got other ladies, but she's our other founder, our sister. All of a sudden, she was like, she kept saying she kept getting in spider webs. And, you know, that's one of the signs and things like that, that the electricity and stuff or the EMF that's around you and stuff. But then all of a sudden, she just like, I know what it is. She's like, I'm so hot, because I told you it was so hot. We were just dripping from with sweat. Her hair was standing up on her arms, and when it would, because of it being so wet, like as in sticky because of the sweat, that it actually felt like she was in spider web. She's like, but this is my hair. It's just coming up. And when she said that, all of a sudden this foul odor came in the room. I mean, it smelled like death. We have never smelled anything like that, but we just held so strong that's why, I mean, I had actually a Bible on me in my pouch, and I truly believe with this investigation, we could just tell, and we could see the steps that it was taking. And it was just really neat to be able to go back and be able to counteract that and still be able to investigate. So I'm excited on what we might be getting, you know?
Right. Did you have any experiences with Homeboy on the top floor, third floor?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is really neat. See, before we even got there, remember how we were talking Outlaw, and we had said that we both had kind of the same experiences and stuff that had happened there. When we got there, one of the ladies that, because it was three men and two ladies that were already there with East Tennessee, and on Monday night, she had the same exact thing happen that I had happened to me and that y'all had witnessed, and, you know, for people. It pretty much had attacked her and stuff like that, and then she went through an episode of being able to see the hospital as it was a long time ago, which is really crazy. I don't even know all about that. I just tuned into the part of her saying what had happened just like me. So when we went in the room, God, man, have you ever seen one of them? It's an EMF doll. It's kind of like a K2, but it's a Raggedy Andy doll, and different parts will light up. Man, we had that room buzzing. We had millimeters on one side, and we had the ovulus, and then we had this doll. Now, I wouldn't have took any of that thing by itself, but you could actually say something and say light them all up, and words would come out of the ovulus, the millimeter would go off, that doll would go off all at the same time, to the point of Rach, our girl, was like, I'm getting it. I'm getting it on video. And it was the greatest thing, but you could tell. Like, some of the things that happened to me was my ears start doing weird. Rachel's ears start doing weird. It was like we could tell the steps that it was taking. It had tore that girl up, man. She was really scared. She had to keep going out. One of the guys from East Tennessee is actually a preacher, ordained minister, I think. And he had to do blessings on her and all kinds of stuff. The thing was really latching on to her because she couldn't even stand to be around people. She would have these, like, episodes and stuff. So I tried to talk to her. I tried to take her aside and say, look, I've been there where you're at. And I tried to give her, you know, whatever advice I could. And I think she's trying to work through it, man. I got to give it to her. I couldn't have stayed in that place for a whole week after, you know, something like that have happened. But, yeah, it's still there. You can tell. It almost makes you think. You remember how People claim that Doug actually did things to bring things in. The feeling we got when we were there is it just kept circling. It just kept trying people. It kept, it's just like a caged animal, just trying to find somebody that's weak enough it can prey on. And it just happened to be that girl this time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily, like, mentally weak, but, like, I think that it has a certain type. And if you happen to be maybe sickly, not sickly, but have something, like, physically maybe wrong with you, like, as in you're weaker, you're, like, feeling weak, you're feeling faint-headed, or anything like that, or medical problems, I think it goes towards that type of person. Yeah, because,
yeah.
Like, okay. The weird thing is that girl was sitting down there, and she kept eating ice, okay? And I was anemic when I first came the first time. And I think it just physically wears you down to where you then you mentally put down your walls, and then it can do whatever. And I noticed that girl sitting there, she's kept eating ice, and I said, are you anemic? And she said, yeah. I don't know what kind of link that has, but I have noticed when you are a little bit sicker, then it seems that these things can come closer to you. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever thought about that, like, just in the paranormal, have you thought about that outlaw?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've had a lot of experiences with spirits that attach or latch themselves to different people in my group. I've had people turn on each other just at a, you know, just like a snap of the fingers, you know,
yeah.
Completely out of the norm. Yeah, it happens all the time, and it's always somebody that's in their personal life having some really bad issues or whatever, and or they're
yeah.
sick. You know, they don't let on that they're sick, but they want to go on the investigation, and
mm-hmm.
then they get attacked.
That is crazy that it does that. Somebody explained it to me as, you know, they believe there's a veil. Well, when somebody gets sick, you know how sometimes we can't see them, but occasionally you get that glimpse of that one that maybe you see, you know, like you'll see a figure or you'll see a shadow or something like that. Somebody explained it to me one time. Now, I don't know. This is just a theory I'm going to throw out there, but when you're sick, you're closer to that veil, so maybe they're able to see you more in tune when you're sick. I don't know. Who knows? But that's just a theory that people have thrown around.
Right. It could be. It could be. I don't know.
Who knows, man? I guess we'll never know unless we get to, you know, God, oh, Lord. Forgive me and don't strike me dead now, but when we get over there, you know what I'm saying? I guess that's the only way that everybody will really know, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Very, very true.
So what's been going on with you, man?
Honestly, not really too much. Just working a lot of hours and
Well, we got you tend to your stuff. I know you got stuff you're doing, Outlaw. We are getting to these.
I'm almost done. I'm just trying to get us all the promotions done for this show that we're on right now. I got
this
our
wonderful, wonderful show.
That's right. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm posting to our Facebook page. If you have not liked the Terrify Facebook page, you need to go and like it. Like I said, I just posted tonight's show link. I'm about to go to the URN Radio Network page and do the same. And if you haven't liked that page, you need to go and like the URN Radio Network. That is a network page that all the hosts post their information on, which I'm doing right now. And you can also follow us on Twitter under URN Radio. Let's see, did that get posted? All right, that got posted there. Now, one more. I'm going to post it to my page here.
Outlaw, wonderful. Have you ever been to Moundsville, West Virginia?
Yeah. No. I've heard of it.
We are getting ready to go, man. We're excited. Some of our team is going. We're going with Blackwater, this team from around our area. And we are so freaking excited. We went there one other time, and we've been dying to get back there ever since, man.
Sweet.
That's the only time. We actually had rocks thrown at us. And that is something that's awesome. I mean, not getting a rock thrown at you, but to have that happen, man, I mean, we were like, man, we got to get back to that place. So we'll have to tell you how that goes too, man. That was awesome.
Oh, definitely. Let's see here. I'm just getting a hold of my guest here. Yeah. Everybody has to deal with the Virginian and Texas accents that we have going on, but you're gonna hear an accent here in a little bit from our guest Devin Belanger. She's got a British accent, and boy,
oh, hey.
I'm telling you, it's very,
man,
very
I love British accent.
Yeah, it's very intoxicating. I'll probably just sit here and listen to her speak.
They can say anything and it sounds pretty. Like, I mean, they're like, oh, I'm going to the bloody can. And you're like, oh my God, she's going to take a crap. And it's so pretty. It's horrible. When I say that, it sounds really rough and rugged.
Well, we're going to what we'll do here is I will read about our guest, then we will do our sponsor commercial, and hopefully by then Devin will have called in. She might have already called in, but I'm going to go ahead and do this. Alrighty. So our guest tonight is Devin Belanger. Devin is the CEO of Mysterious World TV. She is also the director, producer, and host. Devin also does camera, audio, lighting, and now DVD cover graphic design as well. Devin was born in the United Kingdom and has traveled all over the world and now resides in Florida. Devin's interest in the paranormal and unexplained has been a lifelong curiosity. Having always been very aware of activity going on around her and having many uncanny predictions that came true, Devin was unnerved growing up and tried hard to block out each occurrence from her mind. Around the age of 18, she began to endure terrifying, involuntary astral projection incidents, ghostly encounters, and witnessing poltergeist activity. Devin never felt comfortable sharing her experiences with anybody else until she met Angie in 2006 and opened up and shared many of her secrets. Since their friendship blossomed all those years ago, Devin and Angie have gone on many investigations together and recently managed to solve an unsolved triple homicide from 1982 via her team of psychics and the use of ghost boxes. They also began to attend conventions and met some great people with similar interests. Many had different viewpoints and theories. This is when Mysterious World TV was created. This is everybody's chance to get up and close and personal with many different lecturers, authors, historians, celebrities, adventurers, theorists, and investigators. An opportunity for each of you to enjoy the contents of one or more of their lectures and also learn more about them as individuals via video on demand 24/7, 365 days a year. So we'll bring her on here in a minute, but we need to play our ad. Our sponsor is NOLA Ghost Tours down in New Orleans.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend, for vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the location and you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. you get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
All right, we are back. And I do believe we have our guest. We're going to bring her on.
Okie dokie.
Devin, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Awesome. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing great.
Awesome.
Yeah, Devin, on this show, instead of having all male co-hosts, I have three female co-hosts besides me.
That's refreshing.
It is, isn't it?
Awesome. What
so
are we
how
talking
you
about tonight?
Oh, we'll talk about we'll talk about all kinds of things. Because you're a busy bee when it comes to stuff going on.
That's for sure. But you know what? Some crazy paranormal stuff has been happening in this place lately. Crazy.
Yeah. So what have you been up to here lately? What have you been working on?
I'm still trying to complete a lot of the Mysterious World TV documentaries that I've worked on, and I know Jason McLeod is patiently waiting for me to start his movie on his best-selling book about Siege. But I've been doing a lot of outside productions, and I've just got a production coming up on Monday as well, so just nonstop busy.
Do you ever take a break?
No, and I need a break. I'm really, really burnt out. I'm going to take a month and not do anything, and that never happened. Yeah, it's crazy.
Now, for my co-host here who haven't ever gotten to talk to you or whatnot, give them a short little background. I read a lot about you, but how you kind of got into the paranormal.
Yeah, that was mainly from all these crazy things that were happening when I was growing up. My father was in the army, so we traveled a lot. I lived a lot in West Germany, and it just seemed very, very active out there. It was things like every morning I would wake up and I would hear, like, all the flatware dishes and plates would be crashing downstairs. And I just remember my brother and I were ever so young, and we used to get a coat hanger and straighten it out and say, you know, I'm going to go downstairs and poke out the eyes of the burglars, because that's how convinced we were that there was people throwing dishes around. And my brother and I would go downstairs, and the whole house, top to bottom, would be black with swarms of ants all over the walls and in the cupboards and everything. It happened on almost daily basis. I would run back up and wake up my mom and dad and say, you know, come down, there's, you know, the smashing and the ants. And so they would get up. And, of course, it just didn't dawn on us. There was, like, no dishes were broken. There was nothing there. And there would never be any ants on the walls or any sign of it. And yet both my brother and I would see this. And there would be things like bite marks out of the soap, you know. So we'd go to wash our hands with the soap, and it's like someone had taken a bite out of it. And some of those kind of things we dismissed. And there was also a time that the apartments that we had in West Germany used to be big hospitals. So it was a really strange apartment. Like, you walked in the door and it was about 120-foot long hall, and all the rooms in the house were actually used to be wards, you know, hospital wards. So it was a very weird kind of layout. And my brother and I would have the same dream, that we would go into the lounge and it wasn't the lounge. It was like 1930s, 1940s Germany, and it was always a market. It was always pouring with rain, and the Germans were riding on the motorbikes, and we would both wake up and talk about exactly the same dream. So just a lot of things, like toys used to move. My pictures would go upside down. And one time there was a massive teddy bear, and I was talking to my brother. What? So there was a massive, stop freaking me out with those noises now. There was a massive teddy bear, and it started crawling up towards the end of my bed, and I remember we were screaming. So my father took it outside and set fire to it, and as soon as he set fire to it, our kitchen caught on fire. So it was just weird stuff like that happening the whole time, but we just really never talked about it, and eventually it was just things got more active for me, and I just started to start to understand what was going on, but that wasn't until I was like in my 20s.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Did you say a teddy bear climbed up on your bed?
Yeah, it was a big yellow teddy bear that was probably about, I say big because I was probably about 6 or 7 years old at the time. It was a big yellow teddy bear. And it was in the corner of the room. Yeah, and what was weird was we had these, like, so we had these pictures. I don't know if it was supposed to be one of God and one of Jesus. I don't know what it's supposed to be, but every morning those pictures would be upside down, and so the teddy bear was sitting on the chair, and I was reading to my brother, and that's how vivid the memory is, because I was reading, and then I just looked up, and it was just walking stiffly, like swaying side to side, and like I was screaming like I thought I was going to die, but I remember looking over to my left, and stairs were there, and it was like my dad ran up first, and then my mom, and then my big sister. And when they all came in, I looked around, and the teddy bear was actually just sat right on the edge of our bed, like as if someone had placed it there. And we were just hysterical. And I think my dad wasn't into that. He doesn't believe in that. So he was just angry, and he grabbed the bear and took it out to the garden and was just – and it was kind of dark. And he was like, there, I'll burn it so, you know, we don't have any more of this crap, you know, that kind of stuff. And I said, since you did it, boof, our kitchen went up.
Crap. Was it the teddy bear moment that you thought of moving out, or did you leave that house and stay there?
Yeah, we were kind of slaves to the military. I mean, we were pushed a lot. I've moved 57 times, and I've been to 14 different schools with my father being in the military, but we had no choice to the homes we were put in or to the places that we lived at. But I have to say, I've probably lived in Germany longer than I've lived in England or Germany and America, but I have to say, by far, Germany had insane activity, like far more than I ever experienced in England, personally.
Oh, my gosh. Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with your brother? Is he's not your twin or anything like that, is he?
No, and actually it was really strange. When we were younger, we were able to communicate. I don't want to say telepathically, because that sounds really dramatic and like some bad Disney movie, but we were able to communicate by thinking, and sometimes we would do little experiments, like if there was a salt and pepper shaker on a table, and we would both sit and really be focused on it. Not much, but we'd be able to make it move maybe a couple of millimeters. So, you know, we were extraordinarily close, but then he's 2 years younger than me, and we just got to stage it. By the time we got to middle school, you know, I had a different group of friends, and he had a different group of friends, and then we just started, and then I went and joined the Royal Air Force myself, so we just kind of lost, you know, that ability that we had as brother and sister. I have an older sister, and I also have a brother with Down syndrome as well.
Oh my goodness! So, that is really exciting. Well, do you live in the United States now, or are you still?
Yeah, I moved to Florida in '96. So I was actually down in Miami about 10 years. I was widowed there, and a lot of weird things happened in that house prior to my husband dying. Actually, it was we bought this house, and we decided to get it renovated. My husband was like he's like a top businessman, you know, he's all about business. He's a great, very intelligent. He never, ever spoke about ghosts or spirits or anything like that. And so we bought this house and decided we were going to renovate it. And then he would say to me, you know, at night, these three faces float down from the ceiling and they come stand over you. I mean, that freaked the crap out of me. I was like, oh, my God, it's the Grim Reaper. So I'm going to die. And he described them, and it was actually sounded like some of my British relatives that they were dead, obviously, but there's no way he could have known that. And then, I would wake up, and my grandmother, who had passed away, would be blowing on my face and giggling. And then when I opened my eyes and looked at her, she actually looked like she was only 30 years old. It was really beautiful. So we started to get the place renovated, and the plumber, as he was renovating the bathroom, had a heart attack and died. And that's where my husband had a heart attack and died in the bathroom. I found him one Sunday morning. So I don't know. It's like we stirred something up with renovating, because he would talk about, he would say, you know, when I go outside, it's like Piccadilly Circus. There's just so many figures that I'm seeing, like, in the garden and on the ground. And then 2 days before he died, he woke me up at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, and he was freaking out, like, almost crying. And you got to understand, like, this is a businessman. He wasn't emotional like that. And he said this woman in brown came floating down from the ceiling and was just staring at him. And said, you know, could you describe her, or do you recognize her? And he said, you know, she's just wearing this long brown dress. Her face is expressionless. She kind of looked old-fashioned. And he said it felt like a good minute. She was just staring at him. And then 2 days later, he died.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what that was. I've never seen it. Like, for him to wake me up, freaked out over something like that, that just wasn't in his persona. It's just he wouldn't do something like that.
Well, I have a question for you, and I hope it's not too personal, but
when you
say that you communicate with the other side and things like that, when your husband passed, have you ever communicated with him?
Yeah, I think it was a day or 2 days after he died, and to this day I don't know if it was a dream or not. I remember he was down the stairs calling me, and I came out of the bedroom, and I was standing on the top landing of the stairs looking down at him, and then I just ran down, told him, and then I just remember, like, he's wearing this gray polyester shirt, and my husband that was his big thing with fashion. I mean, this man was Gucci and Dior, you know. He wouldn't wear polyester, and it just, the shirt felt, it was like a dirty kind of gray color, and it was very, like, ironed, creased, and, I mean, had the creases where someone has ironed it. I don't know if that's the word you use in America, but it just had that nasty, crinkly feel to it, and his hair was combed, like, almost like geekish, you know, and I was holding him really tightly, just like I knew I would never hold him again. And he was crying, and he just kept saying, I'm so sorry, my angel. I'm so sorry, my angel. I didn't mean to leave you. And I just met, like, I could feel his muscles on my fingers. You know, as I was stroking his back, I was feeling, like, his triceps and his scapula and his lap. I just knew I wouldn't touch him again. And then he just disappeared. And I went, oh, my God. I went into a grief that I can't. It took me 2 years. I mean, even now I can't look at pictures of him or anything like that. So the grief was killed me. So I found out later that he stopped appearing because it knocked me back that much. And then I had a near-death experience. I was at one of the conventions in October 2012, and literally the paramedics were there. I don't know what happened. I was filming, and Aaron Houdini, and I just passed out. And people thought I passed out because of him, but I've seen Houdini that, like, many, many times. So I passed out, shut in all the stage equipment, and anyway, my blood pressure kept dropping. Oh, no, it kept rising. I'm sorry. That's why they called out all the paramedics. And it was, oh, my gosh, why am I blanking on his name? Scott. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm blanking on his name. But anyway.
Okay.
When he came over and the paramedics were running towards me, and he said, "Do you trust me? Will you let me do something?" I said, "Okay." And he took both of my hands in his hand, and if this hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't even believe this at all. I felt like my body went as thin as a piece of paper, like if wind came, it would pick me up like a little thin piece of paper and just blow me away. That's how it felt. And I knew I was going in and out of consciousness, and it just felt very flat. I can't explain the feeling. I can't explain it. And then the next thing I know is I open my eyes, and I have two paramedics to the side of me. And the older guy said, "What is your resting heart rate?" And I said, 42 beats a minute. And he said, "Yeah, that's exactly what it is." He said, "But that's not possible, because when we came running in, your heart rate was, you know, 180, 190. It was climbing. He said, you were going to die." And anyway, it took me some time to get paramedics because they wanted to admit me. And I decided to get back to Florida. And they left. I turned around. And I said to Scotty, "What was that?" And he said, "I just got this message that you were going to die, that these spirits," is what he said to me, "had to go through him, come into my body, push my soul out of my body, and literally stop my heart from exploding," which is how my husband had died, with a heart attack. And so that's what he said. I mean, all I can tell you is what I felt, and that the paramedics were there saying what the heck just happened. So as he's explaining this to me, I look up, and it's no longer his face. It's my husband's face, and he's completely transfigured. Is that the word, transfigured, trans-something, anyway, where the spirit comes through somebody? And, I mean, I just lose it, and I start holding him, and I'm crying, and I'm kind of, I have everything from anger and grief and frustration, and he's saying everything to me like, "It is so beautiful over there. Like, I can't even explain how beautiful it is, but I would give all that up to come and watch over you every single day, but I know that when I appear to you, you just sink into this big depression," and he said, "I don't know what to do." So then when he tells me that, then I said, "Well, if it's so wonderful and perfect and beautiful over there, then go over there and I'll just man up," you know. So, that was very surreal. And like I said, if I was, even at a convention, if someone came over and told me that, I think I would still be listening with my tongue in my cheek. You know, I'm not quite sure if I all I can tell you is that that's what happened.
That is really, really.
Isn't it crazy?
Let me ask you, What conventions do you do? Do you have any coming up?
No, actually, I'm hoping that Melanie Rogers can go on my – Melanie replaced Angie Stockman. So I'm actually hoping that we can work something out, that Melanie can go out on my behalf, because I do a lot of other productions. Right now I've just done some music videos and some concerts and – just about to do another production and then start on the movie. So it's very, very difficult, you know, to have any kind of life for myself, let alone even get away. I miss everybody, and I would love to get to one. So I just have to see how it shapes up.
Right.
You have a lot of things going on right now. Let me ask you, what's the most fascinating thing you've ever worked on?
That would probably be the solving the triple homicide. And how it all happened. And I will tell you one thing though, my ability. Everybody is psychic. I'm not saying I'm psychic like it's anything. Everybody has this ability. But let me tell you, one day I was clipping a horse. If you don't know what that means, it's like the electronic shavers where you take all the excess hair off the horse. And I had made a point of making sure the electrical wire was right back against the wall so the horse couldn't stand on it. And I had a staff member she came around the corner and she started slapping these plastic bags. Don't ask me why. The horse completely spazzed out and it had iron shoes on. And the iron shoe, it flew towards the wall and its iron shoe sliced the electric wire. And I had the shavers, the metal shavers in my hand. And it probably launched me, I would say, about 10 to 15 foot in the air out of the barn. And after that little minor electrocution, that's when it was like it opened a waterfall in my head. That's when I could see things and hear things, and I couldn't turn it off at all. So it's kind of, I don't know, like if anyone's ever researching anything like that, I don't know if there's some kind of connection with some kind of electrical surge, you know, when it comes down to having enhanced psychic ability in any way, shape, or form. So,
right.
But the weird homicide was actually I was just having something ridiculous, like my eyebrows waxed or something. And the esthetician started talking randomly about a house that she was thinking to buy. And I think mostly when people tell you about that and you're not really familiar with them, you're just thinking, yeah, so what? And you're not listening. But as she's talking, I'm seeing a house in my head. And she didn't tell me where it was or she didn't give me an address. And I just had to find it. So I finished there, and I literally got in my car, and I just started following my gut. And I ended up, and the house didn't even have a for sale sign. And I ended up where I felt this was going to be the house. And at the time, I was hanging out with Angie, and I called Angie and gave me the address. I said, can you Google this and see anything, if there's anything weird about here? And she's like, no. So I went back, and all I did was type in the road name, not a number. And the first site that came up was Seminole Sheriff, sort of homicide, and it says it's like 183 Parsons Road. So I type that into my GPS. I drive back. Where I had been standing at that house, if I had just turned around, I would have been facing directly at the house with a triple homicide. So
oh my God.
I'm not actually going to say I had psychically got there. I'm not sure, but those thoughts of, you know, whatever compelled me to be there was actually put into my head, you know. So I went out, so Angie and I went out with just, you know, those little cheap Radio Shack things, and it was so clear, like this voice started coming through, and we weren't getting static, and we weren't getting the crazy stuff, and it, as soon as we turned it on, the radio said this name three times in a row, just the name, like if we didn't get anything else, we had to get the name of the murderer. We also got with that, there was a 12-year-old boy, and he relived the murder scene, like the screaming and what he saw. It was so, that was the only time I ever saw Angie cry ever in like the 7 years I knew her, was when she was listening to this child watching his father and his friend get murdered, and then he didn't die the first time. The guy shot his fingers off, and we didn't find this out. We found this out through EVP, but afterwards through the police report, that the murderer hadn't killed the boy, just shot his fingers off, and then the second time he killed the boy. We brought in another two members, and we also had like a frank thought. And just the information we got, there's no way we could have known. And we had to track down they were a pretty famous band. We had to track down this remaining band member who was at Washington State that totally wasn't into this at all. And we flew him down, but we didn't. We pretended that like we wanted to interview him for a rock magazine because we didn't want to freak him out and say, by the way, we got your dead buddy on tape here. But, so, yeah, he flew down, and I hooked up my earphones to the laptop, and I said, I want you to listen to this. So we went to play the EVP, not telling him what it was. The guy snatched the headphones off and bolted out of the house. I mean, he was gone. And I just said, you know, shit. I bought his plane ticket and hotel, and the guy's taken off, and that was it. We let him go, and then the next morning, mid-morning, he turned up at the house and he said, I'm ready to listen to that. And he just kept saying, there's no way that you can have this voice. He said, you know, I was the band producer, and everything every voice recording, every song, I have it all. There's no way his voice can be coming out of your computer. And it just would say things like bad legs and foot-shaped guns and weird random, but I felt stupid giving these messages. But they were all so personal to this guy. I mean, he was crying. And he'd give us tests too, and he'd say, you know, he would give us a crazy name and say, go ask him who crazy name belonged to. And it turned up, a dog ran out of that murder house and started jumping all over my car. And yet, we'd never seen anybody there ever. So we contacted the guy, and I said, you know, this crazy name you gave us, was that the dog? And he said, yeah, it was. So and it was weird. That investigation, we did that for like a month. And I know that you could argue it for many reasons, and that also you don't know who you're talking to or what you're talking to, but it almost became like a friend. Like, we recognized his laugh, and he had a really great sense of humor, and he was interacting back and forth with us. I mean, even down to talking about cars, this isn't like what you see. I mean, I don't think we could ever duplicate this, but this isn't like what you see where maybe you're watching something on reality TV, and they hear a word, and then you have the suggestions with it. You know, they keep replaying it and trying to clean it up and replay it, and then they put the subtitles up. So after a bit, you're like, I think that's what I heard. This was a genuine two-way interaction, and there was four of us. Four of us were hearing it live, real time. We didn't have to go back and listen with headphones, and they would support it with, you know, things like the dog coming out. There would always be like a backup evidence to go with it as well. And I mean, it's just unbelievable. And even now, to this day, I can't wrap my head around it, because it's beyond everything, beyond all of our comprehension. And there's no way that over a month, and to have that kind of information, you can put that down to matrixing or coincidence, or I don't know. And I even went to a point of thinking, well, could it have been E.T.? But why the heck would E.T. sit and waste their time with an unsolved homicide from 1982 with, you know, a band? Why do that? You know, there's better things to be doing, like trying to save our planet. So, yeah, just totally mind blown.
That's crazy. I mean, that's what we do. A lot of us as investigators, that's what we do it for, is to make that contact. And for you to have, like, a main line, I mean, that is phenomenal. And to be able to help with a homicide, how did you even get involved with that? Did the police come to you? Or did you just start collecting this evidence and then go, hey, guys, I got this?
Actually, what we did was the band member that we had flown in, yeah, irony was he should have been at the house that night that the murder happened. When we flew him in, and then we started to give him, he listened to the message. He could hear the messages. He didn't need us to interpret. He was just had to get over the freakiness of hearing his buddy talking to him, you know, in 2013 out of somebody's laptop, you know, in Florida. You know, that was difficult for him. But he, during the murder investigation when it happened in 1982, he was given information by the police, and he was shown photographs. And that's how we described to him what the little boy, in fact, this is probably the first time I said it out loud, because his mother doesn't know that this happened, you know, how. She didn't know that the boy didn't die straight away. So it was with the messages that he was hearing that he was like, oh, my God, you know, I remember when I was there with the police, this is what they said. And it dressed up a lot. I mean, we messed him up, I have to say. I mean, even though it was, he had a little bit of closure because it was, the whole thing with crossing people over into the light and all that sort of stuff, I mean, that's kind of a hot potato. But this murder victim, the other two that got murdered had crossed over, the boy and the other guy had crossed over, but this one hadn't. And I think he was so angry. And he was talking about how it was cold and it was dark and he was scared. And then when he finally went over, you can actually hear him as he greets his son and he greets his friend. And he's like laughing and crying at the same time. It's like everybody's so happy and it's so warm and I'm dancing. And, you know, and then he gave more messages once he had crossed over. So, you know, it was funny because Angie, it was kind of a good partnership because she really wasn't sure about the whole can there be demons and is there such a thing as crossing over into what. So she was very much blinkered, or I don't want to say blinkered, that's not the right word. She was very more skeptical. So it was kind of an interesting combination, but... Yeah, I don't know if we could ever duplicate it. I don't know why that was so strong or what the ingredients were. But goodness knows, if we could duplicate that, the amount of information that we could get. But I don't know what we did. I really don't.
I think sometimes they just take something.
Go ahead.
Do what?
Yeah, you were saying you think that sometimes they want you.
I think sometimes they just pick you. It's kind of like, to me, I mean, you're probably more of an expert on this than I am. But I think that, you know, as we investigate and stuff, I think that when we go out, sometimes they just relate with some people more than others. And I think maybe they just picked you.
Right.
It's just so funny. Because, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's just because I was just getting my eyebrows waxed. You know, I was like totally not there, not thinking about it. I'm just literally, okay, I get my eyebrows waxed and then I'm going to go do A, B, and C later. And it's like, there's nothing in my head. And it's just, that's how a lot of I live my life. So, like, if I just get a really strong impulsion, I'll just go with it. And because somebody wrote that on the other day on my Facebook, they said, oh, my goodness, you've had so many incarnations in this lifetime, you know, just this living lifetime. And I think she's right, because if I feel something, I just stop and I'll go with it. So I guess my mind stays open. But, yeah, that was bizarre, because then I went through a stage of really – I don't want to say doubting the paranormal, but expanding my mind to say, what if it isn't paranormal? What if this is ET? But that doesn't correlate, not the information and the case that it was. I mean, it was literally, you know, they were the band in the 70s and doing drugs and, you know, that kind of thing. It just doesn't tie in. I don't understand why I was given that information. And especially, it's not even music that I like. I was brought up in Europe, so there was nothing I could relate to with somebody that got shot in the 1980s in America. Just, you know, it's so bizarre and random.
Oh, my goodness. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that with the way religion has kind of taught us, and a lot of people, you know, are so, I guess you could say, hell bent on it, that spirits go to heaven or hell, you know, when we pass, that's it, you know, and they don't come back. I've heard that so many times with clients. Oh, there's just no way. They don't come back. Why are they here? And I know with my experiences, it's not the case. There are spirits that are trapped. There are spirits that don't want to cross. There are spirits that have crossed and still come back, and they kind of guide and help you, you know, if you're a family member or a loved one, someone close to you. And I think, you know, the best lesson I can take from it, and I've said this to Misty and Ashley, when my girlfriend of 3 years passed away and she came back and talked to my friend who was here in my house, who's a psychic, and basically held up the Holy Bible and said, you see this? This was written for you guys on that side. The rules in here do not apply once you cross over to this side. We have a different set of rules over here. And that makes so much sense with all the paranormal that I've come in contact with doing these investigations. There's more to it in what people in society think. And that's the hard thing to break the mold of, is to open people's minds when it comes to the paranormal, because they're taught their ways, you know, and to think outside the box that there are things going on, and when we cross over, we're going to another dimension, and it's not the only dimension out there, you know. And these are also the same people, and Devin, we've talked about this before, these are the same people that don't believe that there's aliens out there, that we're the only one in the billions and trillions of stars in our universe, which I think is absurd.
I think that's so interesting, just that statement, just to have that information that we're living by a different set of rules. I mean, that just fires my mind up straight away. And I'm not even saying I'm a smart person at all, but I am starting to feel more and more unintelligent with the more information that I get, because sometimes it makes my head spin, because where I've interviewed so many different people, and this is why I want to put the connection together with all the shows that I've still got to release, but you look at like Paul Von Ward, and a lot of these people are, you know, they're like preachers, that everybody is religious. And so this is where my head spins, is so he talks about when you die that, sorry, I'm actually picking up my dog story. Anyway, he talks about that you are reincarnated back, or not reincarnated, you're almost absorbed back into the universe, but that your DNA, that the memories that you have, you're then reincarnated with some of the memories or DNA from your former life. So that was a difficult, because then I just imagine everybody just dissolving into some kind of fabric of the universe, because he would also say things like the universe would send suggestions down to everybody on the planet, and only those receptive to it will get this idea. So, for example, you have a guy in Germany, one in Japan, and one in Australia, and all three at the same time are going to say, I'm going to compose this masterpiece. And it's going to be exactly the same masterpiece, because only those three had the skills and were receptive enough to what the universe was sending down. So that was Paul von Ward's theory. Then you have all the other with the ancient alien theories, that it wasn't a god, you know, it was, they were seeing aliens coming down, or, you know, Zachariah Sitchin, where he talks about, you know, how the aliens made humans. And so you look at all that, but then first-hand experience, what happened to me when that guy saved my life and my body, that he said he pushed my soul out of the way, my body, I felt my body go paper thin. What is it that we got with that EVP and why? And there's so many different elements when you sit and look at it in all the different theories, like you could totally go insane. You know, it's really hard. And like you were just saying, that's why I wish everybody, whether it's paranormal, ufology, or cryptozoology, would just listen and accept other people's theories without trying to withhold evidence, or just try to put the fame and the fortune or any of that, just try to put that aside and just listen to theories, because the answers are in there. And right now I think that's what's making it so confusing, is because we're all so segregated at the moment.
I agree. I think that if one day we would all just band together, people talk about unity and some are really down on it, but one time we were helping a client, and it was, we're scientific when we go out, if, you know, as much as we can be in our group. But this lady really wanted to talk to this psychic, and had reached out to her. So our group reached out to this this lady. She actually teaches parapsychology and things like that, and her, what she said to me was, I'm glad that we're working together on this, because now we can help each other on all the aspects of this, not just on our end that wants to have the scientific proof of it, but also on her end, which is more metaphysical. And I think when we start banding like that, I think we can put more pieces together of this puzzle, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, we interviewed, like an astrophysicist. Like, we tried to go right across the board from the spiritual, metaphysical side right through to scientists,
right.
Astrophysicists. And what was funny is we interviewed this one gentleman, and he was not, no matter what we said, no matter what examples, he was not going to buy the paranormal thing at all because he was an astrophysicist. But
right.
Then I turned around and I said, do you believe in God? And he said, well, yes. I said, why? Why do you believe in one entity, if you want to? I'm not saying this to be blasphemous. I was just trying to understand his concept that had he ever had any kind of physical proof or evidence of there being a God, for him to then dismiss what, you know, these genuine stories that we were trying to tell him about the paranormal. And he's just like, nope, not going there. Oh, I'm not going to answer that question. I just believe in God, and that's it. And there's the whole paranormal thing is, you know, it's just a crock. And I was like, okay, so that's the scientist's point of view. So I'm not saying all scientists are like that. Obviously, there's some wonderful scientific minds that are exploring the realm of the paranormal too. But that was really interesting. And as I said, the last time that I was on the other show, we were talking about how I asked 100 mm-hmm. paranormal people at a convention, do you believe in UFOs? And the majority of them went, no, not at all. There can't be life on other planets. Or then I would say to them, well, why? Why don't you believe in UFOs? And some of them said, because God wouldn't allow that. But the Vatican came out and acknowledged our galactic brothers and sisters. So why would the Vatican do that? So I think if the Vatican can come out and acknowledge aliens, then, you know, that should be some food for thought, I think.
I agree. Man, if anybody doesn't believe in anything as, you know, about aliens or anything, they should really listen to somebody from MUFON Talk, because they will set you completely on, I mean, they will set you right in that, because some of the stuff they talk about, it makes you put pieces together that you didn't even think about, you know?
Exactly. And you'll find a lot of the people with MUFON are very open to the paranormal, and they acknowledge mm-hmm. paranormal activity that's associated with it, whether it's one and the same, whether the, you know, what we say is paranormal is extraterrestrial and it's just similar. I mean, we don't know, but it seems that the UFO groups were somewhat more open to the paranormal.
Oh, definitely. And it's kind of funny, you were saying that you spent some time in Germany. Have you ever checked out any of the stuff that, like, Hitler was into with, like, UFOs and things like that? I mean, that he was on a different level of his strategies and just all together things that he was trying.
Exactly. Yeah, there's I have researched that somewhat. And, you know, even today when you – it's funny because sometimes just people that are not even into this at all have been coming up to me, and people are starting to notice. I had a random woman come up to me, and she was saying, do you think it's kind of weird how fast technology has suddenly taken a jump forward? And I started to say, you know, well, you know, that could be alien technology. I mean, anything that's out now, the government's already like 10 to 30 years ahead of us anyway. They've already probably got, you know, flying cars and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed is a lot of people with Mr. Visual TV, because I've been working so much with other productions right now, I haven't really been pushing it to the forefront. It's just been treading water. But I've been getting a lot of people contacting me through Mr. Visual TV to talk about experiences that they're all having, and I'm just noticing this upward trend. And what was more interesting, because I'm thinking, why are they contacting me to tell me about this? And I spoke about in the other show where I had that huge jumbo jet hovering silently about 100 feet above me on a Monday morning as I was driving. And I didn't know at the time whether it was military cloaking or I didn't know what it was. And so that was quite a long time ago, probably over a year ago. And then someone messaged me a couple of weeks ago, and they started talking about how they had this commercial jumbo jet hovering over them. And then there was actually a forum out there, and there's actually, it's happened to about 100 different people. And just people are finding me, and a lot of abductees are finding me and wanting to discuss what happens when they're abducted and go further into their person, you know, the personalities of the ET and what's going on and what they're saying. And, you know, so I have questions, you know, they speak in English or how they're communicating with you, and I have 10,000 questions, and I'm not an expert, I just listen. But all of a sudden, just people are contacting me out of the blue. Not sure what's instigating that at all. It's interesting. Maybe people are waking up.
Well, you know, that's one of the things, when we heard that gentleman speak from MUFON, he said that the government has actually conditioned us where, if you notice, when UFO movies first came out, people were all freaked out about them. I'm talking about way back, like, you know, black and white, whatever. And it's happened so much that they kept releasing them until now. It's just normal. UFO movies are normal. We're not shocked by that. And the guy from MUFON was saying that, you know, they were getting it okay for people to talk about it. And if you saw one, you didn't freak out. He was saying that they were conditioning the public. Also, when you said the jump in our technology, he believes that the government does know a lot about and is getting help or has found things from alien races and stuff, and then they'll feed it into our everyday things. One of the things he talked about was, like, I think it's the Teflon, you know, where it doesn't stick on the pans. He said all of a sudden one, it was just there. And he said, you know, it was like they, and he believed that the government looks at these companies and says, which company would this do good with, and releases it into our everyday life. And we don't even know that this is happening. But they've conditioned us to say, okay, well, I saw an alien, or I saw this, and made it okay. But if this was the same community that was in the 1930s or 40s, we would be freaked out if that happened. But because now it's just normal, then we're more accepting of it. So they've known what they're doing, you know?
Oh, yeah, actually, it's very, very interesting because Paula Harris, she is looking back to the 1950s, and it's almost like she's calling it Back to the Future, and she's looking at all the contact and experiences from the 1950s, and even then you have the books, Frank Strange's book called Stranger in the Pentagon, and it talks about this Venusian, this ET, that's right there in the Pentagon, and I'm not sure if that's when everything started back then, but even now you talk about, people talk about there being aliens working, you know, with the government. You know, I mean, there's so many, you can find things on YouTube and, you know, you can take a bunch with a pinch of salt, but when you start to connect with it, yeah, I absolutely, everything that you just said about, yeah, I don't know which MUFON speak you're referring to, but it sounds pretty spot on. It's kind of tying into everything else. I mean, Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Minister of Defense, I mean, so this isn't Joe Blow from down the street, you know, this is the Minister of Defense is saying exactly the same thing. He's saying we're out of time, that aliens are about to give up on us now because we're just ignoring it. We're ignoring the problems, and it's quite frightening.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more to it than what a normal person. If you've got a person who's not open to this, then they're very closed off because they're not seeing. We actually were skeptics, I got to tell you, before we went to that seminar. And when we did, this guy was telling us stuff that we were like, holy crap, we never even put those two together, you know? And he just, I mean, it was just unreal. Like, he started seeing stuff, like, he said, when you show up, kind of like paranormal investigating, too, when you show up and they have claims and stuff, he said that, you know, when the person that comes to you and can tell you exactly this, and this, then you got to be kind of skeptical. But when they come to you and they say, you're not going to believe this, and then they go into these details, he's like, I'll believe that person before I'll believe the one that is matter of fact. He said, because they're so freaked out at what happened. And it's just really neat. I've never been able to actually investigate any UFO claims or anything because, you know, it's not like the paranormal investigating because you can't kind of quarantine that. Have you ever been able to investigate anything like a UFO or anything?
It's really interesting because I've spoken to a lot and I've interviewed a lot, you know, at Starwix USA, at MUFON, at the UFO International Convention. And I have to say that I was in the same boat as you up till... It was really weird how it turned around. I was actually approached by a director who wanted me to write 3 screenplays for some movies, and he wanted them on the paranormal. And then he said, I want you to write one on aliens. And I'm thinking, I don't know anything about aliens. I'm not into that at all. So I actually went to Paradigm Symposium, and I think I held my breath for 3 days. And it was people like Giorgio Tsoukalos and Linda Moulton Howe and John Ventura. There was, I mean, just every single speaker was absolutely brilliant, and it just flooded in, and I thought, oh my gosh, all the time I've been walking around. And that's where it changed my paradigm, and that's when I started to question everything that I thought I knew, or I thought I had a really good idea. And then I'm like, you know, I don't know anything. I don't. And because the parallel between UFO and paranormal is strong, as you were just saying. I mean, even when it comes down to abduction experiences, they talk about shadowy figures in the room, and they talk about sleep paralysis and, you know, the missing time or the floating or feeling like they have an out-of-body experience. And it all kind of ties in to what you might say. You might think it was a haunting or, you know, it's really, really interesting. But as far as, yes, to go back to your question with the research, I mean, I've seen 2 things, but I don't think I've ever seen anything before. And one was that aircraft, and then the other one was this silver ball or like a – I'm almost going to say it's not like a ball. It wasn't dimensional. I thought it was a hole in the sky that was like a bluey silver, like a hole in the sky. So those are the only 2 like weird things that I've personally seen. But, you know, I've spoken to Barbara Lamb that does hypnotic regression of those who claim to be abducted, and the stories are incredible. But when I went to the International UFO Conference in Arizona, I plane landed and I got on like a little shuttle to the hotel, and the shuttle had like 10 really old people, like I'm talking in their 80s. And they just talk in openly, and they just start talking to me about how they've been abducted since they were like 6 years old. And, you know, and the range of emotions from being frightened and to being angry, like, you know, this is a violation, you can't just take me. And then I said to this one guy, he was like 82, and I said, well, how do you feel if they're going to come back sick and come back again? He said, I'm looking forward to it now because it's almost like old friends. But I was wondering that about the age groups, and there was things, when you talk about people that go missing, like in the Yellowstone, or people just disappear, and it seems predominantly female, but it'll either be young children or old people. And I'm wondering, is there something to do like maybe every 50 years or some kind, something to do with generations? I don't know if that's something that, or maybe somebody is investigating that. But yeah, I wish I had the chance to go out and learn more. But then you'll have to be careful what you wish for, because I'm living on a 20-acre farm out here that, like, seriously, if somebody came and abducted me, I don't think anybody would notice. That's creepy. Actually, I have to tell you something that's just happened that, it's taken me April, May, June, July. It's taken me almost 4 months to realize what the heck was going on. And it's so somebody gave us a relic. I'm going to say it's a relic, okay? That's what I can say. And my editor was staying at my place. He's from Europe. And the day after that this relic appeared, we started arguing. And, like, we've worked together for over 2 years. We don't argue. And we didn't really notice it. And I thought, well, maybe it's just because he's my editor and he's in my space and this is, you know. So we started arguing. So he went back to Europe, and he was supposed to stay 5 weeks to wrap a movie, and then he was coming back to work on our production. And we were approached to do a documentary on something that is called The Gate of God, and it's in Romania, and apparently they did military experiments there in the 1980s. It's supposed to be like a portal or time travel or something. This guy approached us and said, would you do a documentary? My editor said, no, not without any evidence. I said, well, I was one of the people in the military doing the experiment. I stole some documents. The secret police over there don't have the same kind of power. Let me show you the evidence and show you where it is. So he was on his way to meet my editor. He got put in a coma by a hit and run on his way to meet my editor. So,
oh my God.
You know, I'm like, my God, did he die? This is like serious. This is serious. And so the guy did survive. Like 5 or 6 weeks later, he came out of the coma. He wanted to meet my editor again. This is after we got the relic, by the way. And he turns up, and he's like, okay, tell me about what you have. And the guy's freaking out. I want to talk to you. You need to leave. You need to leave. So my guy goes, okay. So he goes out to open – oh, no, he goes out. He sees he's got a flat on his car. So he goes out to the trunk to take out the spare tire. Three guys appear out of nowhere, beat him so badly with metal poles. They probably would have killed him, but some bikers came over and scared these guys off. And as they're beating him with a metal pole, they're saying, don't do the documentary. And he's put in the emergency room. He's peeing blood for 5 days. I mean, he's still in and out of hospital. He still hasn't been able to come back. He had to do try and move around to do this movie. There's this one camera, and it shoots crazy, like 100,000 frames per second. It's just insane, like if you want to do, like, really, really slow motion. And the camera's about $40,000. There was only one in the country. So they rented the camera and put it in this building. Well, the guy that lived in the apartment above where the camera was, his apartment goes up in flames. The firemen came, and with the hoses, they totally destroyed this $40,000 camera. It's the only one in the country, and they're trying to finish this shoot. Then the guys have two vans with the crew in it, so they're going to drive off to go try and get another camera. A dog runs out in front of the van, so they slam on anchors so they don't hit the dog, end up totaling both the vans. And it was just like everything that you can imagine that could, I mean, even worse than you can imagine. You have production hiccups. I mean, every single production, you can plan it to the hilt. But it would create, like, people would back out and people would just quit, and money that was supposed to come in would have come in. And it was just nonstop. And he contacted me going, oh, this is really bad luck. And I'm getting shitty with him and going, there's no such thing as bad luck, and snap out of it, and I'm not buying that. That's production. And I'm giving him a really hard time, and he has to go to Istanbul to go and have surgery on his back. That's how bad it was. Meanwhile, here, I'm going to do the same things. It's like everything I had set up or jobs that were supposed to happen, they would fall through. People were supposed to pay things. All of a sudden, they just disappeared. I was on my tractor mowing a pasture. A tree fell on me. And, I mean, it should have killed me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, seriously. What happened was, okay, that was it. That was Friday the 13th. When I'm editing something that is not inspiring for me, like non-paranormal, I have to keep going out and getting fresh air. So I went in and out of my house about 30 times that morning. The last time I came in, there's a cross, and it's sitting as I open the door and take one step in my house. This cross is sitting on the floor. And I'm like, where did that come from? Because I hadn't carried anything. My gates had been locked. I hadn't left the farm for a couple of days, and no one had been in. And keep in mind, my driveway is like 200 or 300 feet long. I've got double sets of locked gates. You're not getting on my property, you know. And I only found out, like, about a week or two ago that also on Friday the 13th, in my editor's apartment, and he's bedridden at the time, a parcel appears on his windowsill, 6,000 miles away, in the same time as I get across in my house. So I took a picture and put it on my Facebook, and so everybody's like, oh, my gosh, you know, something reports like that, it's negative, it's evil. And by now I'm freaked out. I'm like, what the hell is going on in my life? So I take the relic and the cross, and I go put it in an outbuilding. But it was later that evening that I was on the tractor, and the tree fell on me, and it was so heavy, and my tractor's still in gear, but as my tractor's trying to move forward, it's coming down on the back of my neck. I'm like, it's going to break my neck and kill me, and this is like, I'm going to be on Fox News tonight dressed like this. And I just got really, really angry, and in that moment of anger, I lifted the tree like maybe, I don't know, 2 centimeters. It was enough for me to get hold and stop my tractor moving forward, and I eventually got out from under it, and then I thought about it, and I'm like, what if the cross was a protection? What if that appeared as a protection for whatever these bad things that were happening at my property? So I ended up talking to a friend about it. We went out to dinner, and I said, when did all this stuff start to happen? Because this is not normal. And she said, is it when you got that relic? And I hadn't spoken to my editor for a few days, and then I woke up the next morning, and he had called me, and he said, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that relic. You should get rid of it. And then he told me about the cross. So I said, well, what did you do with the cross? And he said, I went and took it to a church. And I said, I kind of think it was like a divine gift, almost like, because it was pulling us apart, our partnership apart, because I'm not into that bad luck and whining thing, you know. I'm like, we got work to do. You need to snap out of it. So it was affecting our working. So I got the relic, and I drove out. I was scared to take it in my car, I got to tell you, but I drove it a couple of miles away, and I threw it into a swamp, and then I like jumped in my car, so I was really scared that, you know, somebody was going to drive off the road and like hit my car. So I go to Lowe's, right, and I have my phone in a hard holster, and I'm just staring at some shelves in Lowe's, picking some nails out, and all of a sudden my phone just starts blasting out this music, full blast, and it's real, like, people-eating music, you know, it's offensive, and everyone's staring at me. I'm trying, I don't know why my phone had clicked itself onto Rhapsody and just picked out this random song. Well, the song was called Safe from Harm, the band was Massive Attack, and I could not turn my phone off, and I'm, like, pressing it, and it's just saying, Rhapsody will respond to your request, trying to force close. And I couldn't turn my phone off, and people were glaring at me. So I don't know if that was something, a message saying, now you've thrown that away, you're safe from harm now, or whatever this massive attack was. So I kept the cross. And then, like, the next, I go home, and the next day I get 3 more projects come in. Just things immediately start picking up again. But as for my editor, he took the cross away. And things are going as good. They've kind of picked up, you know, like get paid on a $15,000 job, and they gave him like $300 for $15,000. So I was like, well, you know, you got the $300, which is better than zero, but it wasn't the $15,000 that you wanted. So again, if that, I always doubted stuff like that. I always kind of doubted, you know, negative energy or attachments, and was never quite sure about that, but that was slowly eaten away, that you don't realize the devastation that it's causing to your life and the people around you. So that took me almost 4 months to realize what the heck was going on there. Crazy.
Oh, right? My gosh, that is crazy.
Yeah, that was literally, I think it was not last Sunday, the Sunday before that I threw it away. That's how long it's been going on.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm just glad that you didn't take it to the goodwill. It seems like a lot of people I've run across that had something happen to them with something, and they think something's either cursed or something's wrong, they'll take it to the goodwill. And I'm like, man, I'm not shopping there ever again. So I'm glad you threw that in the swamp.
Yeah, I totally, that was actually in my head. And my thing was you know, my editor said to me, go bury it somewhere. Or, and I just said, like, oh, I don't want to really be handling it. But if we bury it, is it going to, like, whose land is it? Is it, are they never going to be able to sell the land? Or is it going to be like some horrible accident? Or will somebody dig it up and find it and then something happens to them? And then when you try, you know, you start thinking about all these scenarios and trying to protect other people. And I just thought, no one's going to be digging around in the swamp and then maybe an alligator will eat it. And I don't know, but that's what I did. And like I said, it was almost like reading a corny book because it was just my phone was ringing and the jobs were coming in and getting paid on stuff. And I was like, oh, gosh, it's such a relief. It's such a relief. I don't quite trust it. Like, I'm still on guard a little bit. But there was definitely, like, a lot of activity. And then, like, down the barn, I had this huge fan. And every morning I would go down, it would have turned itself on. And it's the way it is, it was no way it could have been. My horses couldn't have done it. The dogs couldn't have done it. Even a rat messing around. I mean, it just takes a lot of force to pull a chain that's underneath the fan. So I actually took a video with my phone and sending it to my friend saying, look, the fan has turned itself back on again. So, my farm is kind of weird like that. It's definitely a lot of activity. A lot of people want to investigate, and I said, not till I move. So I'll move from here maybe 2 years, and then you can all let loose because it's crazy. I used to say that I had this farm for 6 years. I didn't live here until January. And I used to say that, like, what happens to my staff when they move into the farmhouse and they're amazing and just dedicated, and then they all start to make crazy life, I mean, really bad life choices, and their life will tailspin, and it just goes horribly wrong. And then I just started to notice these patterns. And the girl that originally owned the farm, she, one day she was closing the main gate, and I've got these big stone pillars, and her car jumped out of gear and pinned her against this pillar. She's got a metal leg now. She had to be airlifted out. And then I've got an old farm truck. Yeah, I've got like an old farm truck, Bessie. And with my last staff member, he was opening the gates. And then Bessie, my truck, she jumps out of gear and almost went to pin him against, but it missed and ripped the door off of my truck. And it was only after I threw that relic away that I started back at all of these patterns that are repeating themselves. Like my last staff member, he moved into the house, he got really, really sick, like bronchitis and lost all this weight and just went on and on. And then when I moved in, I was sick, and I was just getting over it now, but I mean, I was sick for 4 or 5 weeks and had the bronchitis. And then I'm thinking, I never get sick. So where I used to really love this farm, now I feel like we're two tigers in an arena, like pacing around each other going, I'm watching you. But what's weird is my friend Karen, she has a farm like 2 minutes down the road from me. She's had just devastating, tragic things happening at her farm too. So we started to discuss that just a couple of nights ago, that I wonder if this whole area, if there's something going on here. Because, I mean, she just had some, like, crazy accidents that kind of tie in. I don't know. It's just that our farms are very, very close to each other, and it's very, very weird. And a high ratio of people get killed. There's, like, some traffic lights by my farm on crossroads. High, high ratio of children that are being killed, people that get killed. There, a balloon went down into electric wires. So I don't know. Maybe some investigators will need to come out here and investigate the area, not my farm. That was terrible. But just maybe, you know, the area. There's something weird here for sure.
Where do you still live in Florida?
Yeah, I'm in. I'm actually near Medora, which is like a little lovely little historic town. But I'm kind of between Orlando and Ocala. So the area that, you know, if there's any investigators listening, is useless, or they can contact me and I'll give you the two roads that I just think is worth investigating.
Normally when we have around here, because we live in Virginia, normally when they start saying things about, like, the land, the first thing that people latch on to is either, like, Indians or if there was a war. Do you know of anything? Yeah, or any soldiers or anything like that? Do you know of any wars or maybe Indians or anything like that that lived around your area?
No, and actually I really haven't researched Eustace, and that was kind of on my list, but like I said, ever since I threw that relic in the swamp, I got really, you know, nicely busy. But that's something that I do want to research. But the other thing that lands, I also want to look at what other activities going on. Before, have there been cryptid sightings? Have there been UFO sightings? And, you know, and then if so, what is it? You know, is it geography, topography, ley lines, water, what is it?
Hey, Misty.
Yes.
I just got paged. I have to go into work.
Okay.
The wonderful life of living, working in the oil field.
Oh my God.
Wow. Well, thanks.
I'm on call this week. So I gotta run, but Devin, I enjoy the heck out of talking to you. And these girls got it. You girls got this.
Okay.
It's all about tiaras and shoes now.
I know, right? But,
all right, well, you have a good night at work, and be careful.
Yeah, you remember how to end the show, right?
Pick a song to play us out and then hit end episode.
Yes, ma'am, you got it.
All righty. We'll take care of it. You be careful.
I will, and try to keep your sister in check.
Yeah, the wild and crazy one.
All right, girls. Devin, it's a pleasure. I got to run.
All right, and thank you for the invite. Have a great night.
All right.
Bye. Okay, so tell us about, you were saying that your most exciting, I mean, your life to us, I mean, just listening is so eventful. Yeah, and so full of paranormal. To me, I'm like, well, I graduated high school and then went to work, and then I don't have any of these elaborate stories. How did you get into all of your, like, you have some filming things and things like that. How did you go from being sensitive and having these extra gifts to starting to, like, you have an editor now and all these projects. How did you transition into that?
Well, actually, I was on the Earth camera for 10 years. You know, I was a TV host and model and an actress, and I was located down in Miami. So I was very, very busy in front of the camera. And when my husband died, I mean, we were down in the Fort Lauderdale area when he died. So at that point, you know, I was grieving and everything, and I didn't want to be in front of the camera anymore. So I came up to Orlando, and that's actually where I met Angie. But I was here for quite a while. I never actually thought about doing the directing or anything like that. And it was just, she was a great help because, like I said, I never told anybody about stuff that had happened to me growing up and all that, the paranormal things. And it was only how I got into the mysterious world was literally from, I think it was the big convention in Kentucky like a couple of years ago, and it was really expensive and difficult for us to get there. And then every time we tried to get into one of the rooms to hear a speaker, we either had to queue forever, or we got to the front door and they said, sorry, there's no more seats, and then they would turn us away. And I was like, man, you know, this has cost me over $1,000 to get here and then get into the hotel, and I can't hear all the speakers, and the speakers are only speaking once. And it was, and that's not in anything to slam the convention. It's an amazing convention, and they had me there as a speaker last year. So it was just that frustration when I attended and I wanted to see everybody. That's when I'm like, okay, well, I had no idea where I was going with that. I was just like, well, let's put the cameras on them and just hear them talk. And I think originally I was just wanting to have some kind of video archive that I could refer back to. And then, I don't know, it just started to take a life of its own, and to the point that we recorded 60 shows. But I didn't want it to be talking heads, you know. So I wanted to be able to bring more people into our world, not frighten them or intimidate them if terminology is not familiar. So a lot of people are very visual. So when we interviewed them, I would then have my actors here in Orlando, and we would film reenactments. So you would have the interview and the narrative, and then also see the actors reenacting whatever the speaker's talking about. And that way I thought we could reach out to more and more people that are kind of curious but not willing to take that next step in either attending a convention or just altogether being intimidated or thinking that we're all freaky. And that's weird as well, because with my sister production company, it's still Mysterious World. It's just, I call it MWE, because there would be people probably that wouldn't employ me as a production house, because they would say, oh, she's into like ghosts and UFOs, and she's really weird. So, you know, that's why I made the divide. It's still, you know, the corporation is legally Mysterious World TV, but I just hide it behind the initials so I can get the other jobs. But,
well,
yeah, that's...
I agree with you on that.
I'm about education. I really am. And I was approached by some networks as well, about 5 at this point. And I just wouldn't go there. And it's no disrespect, again, to anybody that's TV right now. But what we do is, like, they're 90 minutes to 2 hours long. I don't want that information sliced and diced and a fear factor put in. I wanted it to be about really, you know, serious research and serious education, but in a way that can be digested by anybody, any background, any level of education, or any interest in the paranormal, whether they're, you know, serious researchers or somebody that's just like, you know, my friend's cousin thought she saw a ghost. I want to be able to reach out to all of them. And so it's not me that has the information. A lot of people come to me for... You know, they ask questions like I'm going to have an answer, and I think really I'm just a platform or a medium to bring, you know, these people that are far more knowledgeable than myself, to bring them forward. That's what my hopes were anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I can completely understand. I understand definitely about the abbreviation. Sometimes people, when you bring into the paranormal into it, they get kind of skittish. They think that everybody's either, you know, really goth or really weird or something, but they don't understand it's a big umbrella now, and there's all sorts of people, from housewives and mothers all the way to, you know, professors and stuff like that, and I wish that people got to see that. So I understand about the initials.
Yeah, I mean, there is such a stigma attached, and especially, you know, I'm kind of out in the boonies here. So, but what's interesting is sometimes when you're brave enough to share it and take the ridicule, 9 times out of 10, somebody does actually have a story to tell. And a lot of defensiveness comes because something maybe has happened to them and they're just frightened about it. And I remember Melanie and I were at a convention, and we were just walking down to go get some dinner, and this guy came running up behind us, and he was just like, oh, you're not here with all that ghost stuff, are you? And I just turned around and said, yeah, we are actually. Why? Don't you believe? And he's like, no. I said, well, why not? And then he stood there talking about half an hour about all these experiences he had. And I said, but you came to us all defensive saying you didn't believe, but that's valid, the stuff that you have seen to be defined as paranormal. And he wasn't really scratching his head. You know, I think most people have experienced something, but we're conditioned. And that's, you know, the whole reason I didn't. I think I was 27 before I said anything, because I was conditioned growing up, not by my mom or my grandmother, because the women are very sensitive on our side, but I was conditioned not to talk about this stuff. You know, and it's the same way. I mean, look how psychic children are, or the things that children see. And what's the first thing to say? You know, oh, you've got an imaginary friend and you shouldn't talk about that. People are going to think you're strange. And they teach the child to shut down. Gosh, can you imagine if children meditated and developed that, like, right from the get-go?
Yeah, we were blessed to meet this lady who, she described it as her family, I think she was even homeschooled and stuff like that, but her mother and her father never told them that they couldn't do certain things. So they never grew up with the stigmatisms of, you know, that's not real, don't believe in that. So she actually, I think, said that they, somebody came and did a case study on her family because they can actually communicate without talking. You know how you said you and your brother had kind of experimented with being able to, you know, communicate with each other? Well, her whole family was like that. And she said it was really weird until they went out into, I guess, normal society and stuff like that because they pretty much stayed to themselves. Then they realized, hey, this is not normal. But to them, it was normal. And I think that if we don't put that on, could you imagine, like you said, if we didn't tell the children that, oh, no, don't believe in this or don't think like that, that's not normal, could you imagine what they could do then?
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know whether I'm just turning into a raging hippie or whether it's just this big spiritual awakening that's happening, but I just know I've got to the point that I stand back and it's, the world is so hard and abuse and greed and power and war and death, and you just look around going, we're here for such a short time. Why does it have to be like this? And I'm with you, and I think that family sounds incredible, and I would just love to see children. I mean, they're born with that sixth sense, and if it was developed, I just wonder if, you know, you'd have an entire generation more strictly evolved and aware and sensitive children. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll. I would like to see our society get to that, but gosh, I don't know if that's going to be in our lifetime.
Yeah, I know. I think, like right now, I think we're trying to build this little army of spiritual warriors for, you know, whatever they come in the future. But yeah, it's tough out there. It's very, very tough. So, for sure.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, it's been a delight talking to you tonight. I mean, you have so many experiences. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, or if they wanted to, you know, reach out to you or something like that, how would they do that?
My website is easy. It's just mysteriousworldtv.com, or we have a Facebook page. I am bad, though. I really haven't maintained that page for about 6 months, so I'm sorry. But I know Melanie will check it every once in a while as well, but just on Facebook, mysteriousworldtv. And then if you have a normal question and you don't want to talk paranormal, it's NWTV Productions. I'll hide behind that. So, yeah. And you'll be able to email me, Devon at mysteriousworldtv.com.
So what do you have coming up? Tell us what you're going to get into.
I was really hoping to get another 6 DVDs released. I think I've got 11 out right now. I was hoping to get another 6 done this year. But like I said, I've got one more big production that I'm starting on Monday. And then do you know Jason McLeod and his book Dark Siege?
Me personally, no. But tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, it's such a good book. It's very, a very easy read, you know. I actually read it. I read the book start to finish on a transatlantic flight, and I'm not good with reading. I get distracted. But it's a true story about, it's still along the lines of Amityville and The Conjuring. It's about a family that the kids play with a Ouija board and demonic infestation. The father gets possessed, and it, just how it affects the family and the chain of events and the final exorcism. And Jason tells me it's a true story, and it's just reached, I think, number one position in its demographic, you know, with the paranormal. So he asked me, we were going to do the documentary on it back, I think, last November, and I actually went to Connecticut and I got produced already, and then he approached me about doing a movie, and I know he's already had a European production company approach him already, but he wants us to do it. So
that's
he's
awesome.
Just been patiently waiting for us to do the movie on that book. But it's book Dark Siege, and like I said, it's very, very good book, and it has a light. It's not all dark and at the end, he does a chapter analysis, and I really like that because, again, it's very informative and educational. And it doesn't leave you with that. I mean, it's frightening. The book is frightening. But then when you get to the end, you don't, like, close the book and go, oh, crap. You know, at least you put some light into it. So, you know, you're okay to go to the bathroom at night. So, but, yeah, that's in the works for us. But I'd like to take a month off of doing the commercial production and really, really concentrate on the serious world and get some more documentaries out. I just have this feeling that I can't explain it. Like, I don't want to say it's that we're out of time, but I have this sense of urgency that I cannot explain and a sense that I don't want to own anything material. And I cannot explain that feeling, but it's like everything that I own that is material that is not serving me, I want it gone. And like I'm selling my horse trailer and I don't know, just anything around the house. I need to be light, I need to be free, and I can't explain to you why. And then I was I need a car because I drive a big car, it's not very economical, but I need it. And so my friends are saying, well, just buy a second car and then put, you know, MWT Productions all over it. And I just said, no, I can't own anything. I'll lease the car. But I just have, I don't know if anybody else is feeling anything like that, just a need for change, a need to be free, a need that anything material is almost laughable at this point. And I don't know what that is, but like I told you earlier, I go with my intuition, and my intuition is screaming at me, be light and be free. So that's what I'm working towards right now.
Well, you have to go with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably the craziest thing I've said all night, right?
I believe when we get these signs from wherever they're coming from, like you were talking about before, the universe and stuff, just go with it. Eventually, you're going to be like, hey, that's why I had to do all this.
Yeah, it's going to go either way. It's because it's so strong with me. It's so strong. It's almost my soul driving, just like my work and to be free. And so either in a couple of years, you're going to look back and say, man, she called that one. Or you're going to look back and say, well, so she's homeless and like, totally crazy. See which way it goes. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I really sense a huge change coming for everybody. But I don't know what it is. I'm not good enough.
Man, we're going to be looking out for that. You're going to have me on alert now. I'm going to be like, what's the change? I'm going to be looking around.
Well, I don't know, like maybe in all your future shows, like if you get any sensitives or mediums or anybody in that has that ability, I don't know, maybe see if that's sensing anything. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. That's what we're going to, you know what? You just gave me a great idea. I'm going to ask them all that question. I'm like, so do you get any sense or anything? And then, you know, if we get like a, I don't know, like a base reading kind of like of all of this, maybe I'll drop you a message and let you know what we're getting. That might be kind of interesting. I might have to keep up with this now.
Yeah, it would. It'd almost be like, you know, your little catch question that you put in there just for everybody. And even, I don't know, non-sensitive people. I've had a few of my friends that I hadn't even seen for weeks or months, and we get together for dinner, and every single one of them is saying the same kind of thing, like they just feel that they need to just pack up and leave and change. And the weird thing is out west seems to be coming up. I said, okay, like if you could just jump in your car and just walk away from everything, where would you go? And the answers are consistently coming up as California and Colorado. So
really?
I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, let's see if those two states come up, if people are sensing that there is a change coming, or if people are sensing the need to make a lifestyle change, but they're not quite understanding why. I think it would be like an interesting study for sure.
Wow, I should be writing this down.
Listen in the archives.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was an enjoyment for me. It's kind of neat to meet a strong woman in this field. There's a lot of strong women in this field, but they don't get a lot of opportunity to shine. So when we got a lady like you on, we really, really appreciate it. And all we're inspired by all the stuff you're doing and have done. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's all just driven by passion. That's all it is. I love your energy as well. It was good because I was a little sleepy before I came on. I was like, oh, gosh, make sure I have some energy. But you guys are great, high energy. I loved it.
Oh, well, I'm pretty sure I could speak for the Paranormal Outlaw and let you know that anytime you'd like to come back on, we'd love to have you back on. Is there anything that you'd like to share with any of our listeners before we get ready to head out?
No, just like I said, if anybody does have any experiences that they want to share with me, I'm really open-minded. I'm not saying I can help with anything, but I'm always doing the research and trying to connect the dots. So whether you've had UFO experiences or you think you've seen a cryptid or there's paranormal stuff going on, I'd love to hear from you. Just because I'm in production, it doesn't, put me in a separate, it's not like a separate category that I'm just talking to researchers. I'd love to hear from everybody and just their theories and experiences. I just love it. I love to hear from people.
That is really neat. That, something I had said to our group recently, because we went to a location that was just off the charts. We actually said, this is like a movie. So I might have to drop you a line myself.
I do. I would love to hear about it. And I don't know. And that's just, I do. I think the answers are out there, and people shouldn't be afraid to come forward and, even if they think it's insignificant, just even down to, people that claim to be Bigfoot, do they see a blue flash of light before they've seen a cryptid? And before they see an apparition, do you hear a knocking noise? And it's these little things that you think that you don't see or hear. Then once you're aware to listen or look out for it, then all of a sudden people are like, you know what? Yes, I did. I did hear that. It was John Penny that brought that one up with me, because he said something about that, and I said, no, I've never heard nothing. I've seen a spirit or an apparition, and I thought, how do I know? Because I wasn't even aware of that sense. I was more of a like, oh, my gosh. So I'd love to see what similarities there are that we can go deeper into this, to find patterns.
Definitely. Well, thank you, Devin, for coming on. And we'd like to hear from you again soon. And we'll be in touch with you, sweetie.
Yeah, please do. And anything from your little survey, I'd love to hear the results of that.
Definitely. And I'll be thinking of you every time I ask that question. All right, sweetie. Well, you have a good evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You guys have been great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, guys. Well, I guess it's that time to shut it off for tonight. We've had a great night with everybody. Ash, you want to say something now since you didn't talk the whole damn thing?
I was holding it in for everyone till the end. So now that you've heard all this grandness that we've had and been educated in so many things, I want to say good night. You have a nice night, and thank you for the evening listening of
AC/DC. Good night.